Hey, everybody, and welcome to another... Hold on a second. I think it messed up. Hold on. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Hollywood Boulevard Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. And tonight, we have an awesome show for you guys. I'm the only one, I think, that's not on the freaking East Coast over here. So everybody else is 6 p.m. over there, and here it's 3 p.m. So awesome. I've got my co-host with us. I've got my co-host here. I've got Alfred Crane. How you doing, Alfred?
Wonderful. And you, Jonathan?
I'm doing great.
Great to be here tonight.
Except for jumbling my words. we also have Joe Turk, who will be joining us as our new co-host starting next year, but for now he's kind of doing like a little trial run with us. Please welcome Joe. How are you doing, Joe?
Doing great. How's things out west?
It's it is what it is, man. Everything's locked down. Back to lockdown. So fun times. But aside from that, it's, you know, it's fun. We've also got our special guest for tonight. We've got Rick Weaver here. How are you doing, Rick?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Awesome.
All right. So Rick's been on the show 3 or 4 times so far. I think this is his second this year because he did a Rambo one with us. And then he did 2, I believe, in 2 or 3 in the first season. So we love having Rick back, and he'll definitely be back next year for sure. If he wants, you know, he may be tired of this now, but like, you know, just be like, nope, can't do this anymore. You know,
I love doing the show.
Well, yeah, especially I think were you on it when we did a Kevin Smith one before?
Yep. Yeah, okay. I did the Kevin Smith one and then a Boy Meets World one.
Dear Lord, perfect. What are you doing, Alfred?
I'm trying to plug in my power cord.
You're just like pushing the thing.
Some technical difficulties.
Just like, what the fuck are you doing over there? Because I can see you. Because you're, you know. Anyway,
yeah, I was like, I need to turn off the camera for that.
Anyway, so you guys can't see any of that, so because it's a podcast, haha. But it was really funny. And moving on, we're going to talk about Jay and Silent Bob, a reboot, the sequel to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. The thing with the reboot was, I know from what I've understood, Kevin Smith had a heart attack, and because of that, he started kind of like change his life around. He started eating healthy, and he started to think more about himself, that, you know, like kind of what he wanted to do with his life. And one of the things he wanted to do was make another Jay and Silent Bob movie. I think like that was the plan. And obviously he wants to, I think he's going to make another Clerks, and there's also supposed to be a Mallrats series or something going on. So hopefully he'll be able to do all that and bring back all his old stuff, because everybody, you know, loves it. And so he made Jay and Silent Bob reboot last year, and it was sort of a labor of love. And a lot of people signed on, a lot of great actors signed on for cameos and other things. We'll probably get to that in a little bit. But to begin with, like, when did you first see this film? I'm going to ask everybody separately. So let me go with Rick first, since he's the special guest. When was the first time that you saw Jay and Silent Bob reboot?
So I actually got to see this. They did a special event. I believe it was the day before my birthday. So like October 15th, they did a one-day event where you got to see Reboot in theaters before they started doing the roadshow. So I was in the first night it came out, I went and saw it. And then the following night they did Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and Jay and Silent Bob Reboot as a double feature.
Nice.
But I went the first night and got to see Reboot, and they had bonus footage like before with Kevin Smith and Muse talking for like 20 minutes beforehand. So it was really cool to get to see it, because that was technically the only day it played in theaters, were those 2 days wide. at least in my area. Nice. And then they did the road show, so.
All right. What about you, Joe?
I saw it when it came out on Redbox in January, I believe. I had an opportunity to see it when it was doing like the little one or two nights, like Rick was saying, but it just, the timing didn't work out at that time for me. So Redbox in January, I believe, and then I saw it again a couple times, and last night. saw it on demand last night. So yeah,
nice. What about you, Alfred?
I saw it in Richmond in February during the Reboot Roadshow.
Oh, nice!
They showed the movie, and then Kevin Smith, his daughter was there for that because she was dating a guy in short pump, and so she happened to be there that night. So both of them talked about the movie for a while afterwards.
Oh wow, Harley was there. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah,
so that was unexpected.
Yeah, no, that was great. I've seen Kevin Smith do his stand up and everything, or whatever you want to call it, his you know, Q&As and stuff, and I enjoy watching him, you know, talk and everything. So I would always love to kind of see I would have loved to have been on the road show, but unfortunately didn't get a chance to do that. So the first time I saw it was, I think on Amazon when it released on Amazon. Oh, nope. I take that back. The first time I got to see it was on DVD or Blu-ray. I'm not sure which one, but I, went to a, in Van Nuys where I was staying at the time, there's a video store that's there. And I was just rummaging through the new releases. And Jane Silent Bob Reboot was there before it was actually out, you know, and stuff. So like before it was on Amazon Prime and before it was on, you know, anything else, I saw it through like a DVD or whatever of it. And I was super excited just to watch it, you know, because I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. He's probably the one director other than like Alfred Hitchcock maybe that has pretty much inspired me as a filmmaker. You know, there's just something about his movies that are very quirky, very silly. So I will talk, I want to get this out first. And then I guess we can talk kind of more of what we weren't fans of the movie. Now, whether or not you are a fan of like everything or not, what was, I was not a fan of the opening scene, you know? I just thought it was way too over the top and almost like when I first saw that in the like trailers, it almost turned me off from the movie itself. What do you guys think? I guess it's, I'm going to start going in different orders, you know, throwing everybody off. So Joe, what did you think of like, did you enjoy all of it or was there some that you weren't a fan of?
There's things that I really, really liked about it, but then there were some things that felt almost a little, I don't say disjointed, like it just a few things missed the mark a little bit, and it was a little long, I thought. But in general, I mean, the stuff that really hit so well that I really enjoyed it overall. But yeah, there's a few things that it was like, some of the jokes fell a little flat, but just loved all the tongue-in-cheek where a lot of them talk references of their careers, basically by referencing movies of their own and stuff like that. Those parts were just great. And sometimes they even looked over the camera and they sort of broke that dimension. And that was fabulous.
Yeah, they did that for Jane Silent Bob Strike Back. So it was almost kind of like a, a throwback to that thing where they did that like three times in Strike Back. And I think only once, thank God, in Reboot. Alfred, what are your thoughts?
I liked most of it for the most part. I enjoyed it. I just shut my brain off. I liked it better than Clerks 2.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the opening, I was just trying to figure out what was going on. It seemed like they had a little bit to find their game. And then once they established it, then it was pretty good to go.
Right.
Some parts, I agree with Joe, some parts were a little slow, could have been tightened up a bit. But I really, some parts I just couldn't stop laughing. I just thought they were so great.
Definitely. What about you, Rick?
I think I mean, when you talk about the opening of the movie and kind of, you know, it feeling disjointed, I feel like Kevin Smith wanted to start the movie in front of the Quick Stop because that's where his career kind of started, and it's where Jay and Silent Bob were, you know, born, if you will. So I don't necessarily like the whole restaurant thing. And then the courtroom scene, you know, it just felt like a weird start, but I guess they needed it to get, you know, the plot basically. I just feel like there were a few like missed opportunities in those scenes. Like Justin Long's character, he's talking with the same voice that he uses in Zack and Miri, which technically I don't think is in the View Askew universe, but he has the same goofy voice that he does in that universe. So why not be that character?
Oh, he is that character. He just never said it.
Oh, I see. I thought he used a different name.
No, I don't think so. He might have.
Maybe.
It said lawyer. It said lawyer on his credit. That's what like kind of annoyed me a little bit, because it said lawyer on his credit. So I don't know if he ever actually said Randy Saint Randy or whatever, but it was pretty much the same character. It was, I think when I listened to his commentary, because Kevin Smith did commentary for it that was like live on YouTube. He actually said that was supposed to be him bringing Zack and Miri into the View Askew universe.
Gotcha. So. But I mean, outside of the first 5-10 minutes, just feeling a bit weird. You know, there's jokes that don't necessarily hit, but no comedy is going to have where every joke crushes. But there's also scenes that are laugh out loud. The whole Brody comic scene is really funny. Lots of jokes where they reference like Jersey Girl and Tusk and Mallrats and other pop culture things. Jason Lee takes a dig at Alvin and the Chipmunks. The part that bothered me, I guess, was Chronicon. I felt like it was there was a lot of self-promotion, Hot Topic being wedged in there. But I think that's just a nitpick. Like, I really enjoy the movie. I've watched it, I think, 4 times now. So it's not like I dislike the movie, but the Chronicon thing just seemed a little, the Keith Coogan payoff was a little weird. Like, it just seemed out of nowhere to have Keith Coogan in the movie. But
they kept saying dishes are done dishes a lot, done. which was a running joke.
It felt like a weird cameo. Like, why choose Keith Coogan out of multiple actors, I guess, felt a little weird. But I get that it was a don't tell mom the babysitter's dead reference.
Right. And I think they chose Keith probably either because Kevin was a fan of Keith, you know, himself or whatever, like a fan of that, you know, whatever. Or he just, you know, he just wanted to work with Keith, you know, and he chose that as the running joke. But it did get a little like that became a little bit of an annoying thing of like everybody saying the dishes are done. Like, I hadn't even thought of that phrase. And since I had seen that movie, and I honestly never thought of it as a catchphrase or anything, you know, and they were making it sound like it was like the most epic catchphrase that everybody knows, you know, like even the guard was like, don't tell mom the babysitter's dead. Right. Like, really, like everybody gets that. Like, I guarantee if I walk outside in Hollywood, if I walk outside and say the dishes are done, most people are just going to look at me and go, okay. You know,
I would think two out of 10 people would probably be like, oh yeah, don't tell mom the babysitter's dead.
Maybe.
And that's only because you're in Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like
that one actually, I mean, I remember it, but that movie was sort of, I mean, I remember seeing it when I was like 18 or something like that. So, I mean, I've always joked that line in the movie, but yeah, I didn't think that movie had that sort of cult following, if you will, that would resonate 30 years later necessarily.
Well, my big question is, did it come out around, let me look it up. Did it come out around the same time as Clerks? Because
I think it was a year or two before. It's like 91, 92 maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it came out in 91.
Okay.
So Clerks was what, 93?
Yep. So it came out 2 years before Clerks. That must have been like one of the movies that Kevin went to see in the theater a lot, you know, and that could be the only reason I would imagine that he would even like put Keith in there and do all that stuff, you know. I mean, it's a great movie. Don't get me wrong. And I plan to do it eventually on Hollywood Knockbusters. And they're apparently remaking it. So
yeah. Really?
Yeah, it's getting a lot of like attention again, you know. And yeah. I think
is it a remake or is it a reboot?
I think it's going to be a remake. And the only reason I say that is because I don't think they're going younger, you know, on it or whatever. The youth, like, which I love that. Oh, let's talk about that, because that was honestly one of my favorite parts of the movie is the explanation of the remake and reboot and everything. And the fact that they don't make squeakles. That was a nice little reference. I loved how Silent Bob like made that little face, you know, when he said it, because like they all got it. It was all inside jokes and winks and nods to each other, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think Rick touched on it already about that scene being one of the better scenes of the movie. To me, that is one of the best scenes. I mean, the cross referencing with so many different other the previous USQ movies, as well as just sort of taking poke at himself and stuff like that for the squeakle reference and stuff like that. Just overall, I mean, just it tied in really well, and the humor played well off each other. And I thought they hit on most of those jokes pretty well.
Yeah, with the mall rats joke, with him saying, you know, that there's mall rats here. And there were, you know, they said something about, I didn't see any kids here. And he said, no, I'm talking about the actual rats in the mall, you know, and stuff like that. I thought that was, it was neat. I'm wondering, because of this, if they do a mall rats 2 or a series or whatever, will Brody's secret stash be in the mall? Because that's where he's now saying that it is, you know, or whatever. It's his comic book place is actually in the mall. So I'm wondering, that would actually work out now, because now he can own them, you know, he can own his own place inside the mall. So he can be an ultimate mall rat all the time, be walking around, you know, the mall all the time, which I think is a pretty cool like setup, you know. What I didn't like, and I'll go into this real quick, is the fact that we don't really get anything about Dante, except the fact that Jay and Silent Bob are the ones who do the gum in the locks. That made me freaking happy. Like that, like the fact that was never like addressed, like never figured out who was the person who did it. That was a pretty cool twist at the end. However, there was not much with Dante, and there's definitely no Randall at the time, because I guess Jeff Anderson had an issue with them for a while, and now they're just now getting back to being friends again. So,
well, one thing about with the scene with Dante, because I mean, I love Clerks so much, and so this took place obviously after Clerks 2, but didn't they like rebuild in Clerks 2 at the end and stuff like that? The shop, I guess that was the same shop, just sort of redone at the end from the end of Clerks 2. So just trying to keep the continuity of it all going. I wasn't sure on the timing and stuff like that, because it just looked like he was so miserable, and it seemed like with Clerks 2 he ended so happy. So I was like, has he resorted back to misery or something?
maybe I don't know. We'd have to watch Clerks 3 whenever that comes out to figure out what he wants to do with Dante's thing. But I agree, because and did you guys know this, that the Quick Stop and the Cock Smoker place or whatever, that actually was a set. That was not actually the real Quick Stop.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
You did not know
that either.
Did you know that, Rick?
Yeah, because the Quick Stop, they changed all the signage, and it's just in a, the area around it doesn't look like the original movie, so they didn't want to use the actual place, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's been built up all around it, and they're converting the video store into a podcast studio.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, really. I did not know that. Okay, that's cool. I learned something new.
It's going to be Smodcast East Coast podcast spot.
So does that mean that when so for people who don't know, and if you don't know much about the Kevin Smith podcast stuff, Kevin Smith has a podcast called Smodcast. He also got a ton of other podcasts. He's just kind of like me in a way, where I have a million other podcasts that I do that I co-host or whatever. I'm like the indie version of Kevin Smith when, you know, and whatnot. But he has his own channel and he has a ton of different shows that he does. And some of them are like Jane Silent Bob Get Old, Hollywood Babylon, you know, things like that. But he also has other shows with a lot of independent filmmakers or actors or people he's friends with, like Brian, I think they did Comic Book Men. I'm not sure if that was actually an actual podcast or not, but they, you know, I know they did a bunch of different stuff, like Walt and Brian, who do Comic Book Men, have their own podcast. I think it's called like Tell Them Steve Dave and stuff like that. So they have these things. I'm wondering if the East Coast people that aren't over there, like Brian and Walt and all of them, would be over at that, you know, place doing their Smodcast ones when everybody else is in LA.
I would think that's what it would be for, you know, that, or if Kevin was ever in the area and wanted to, you know, record a podcast or something. I think it's just so they have another location. Because like you said, I think he has like 12 or 13 podcasts in his network. Like, you know, Fat Man on Batman is another one, but he has a ton of them.
Uh-huh. And a lot of them he either hosts or co-hosts, you know.
Yep.
And that is amazing that he's able to do that. Like, he's so constantly busy, you know, and then he's taking breaks to go do, you know, to go do movie stuff, you know, occasionally, but mostly a lot of times now he's like the podcast guy. And he loves it. He thinks these things are going to change the world, basically, you know, so he's trying to entertain people as much as possible. But yeah, so that's interesting. I did not know he's going to have the podcast set up over there. So that totally makes sense.
Well, I like that they threw the red box on the other corner of in front of the, so that I guess the video store was replaced by a red box. Yeah, that was nice, nice little tongue in cheek jab at stuff too.
Where times have headed, right? There's no video stores anymore, which kind of sucks. I would imagine, like, if you had the money, if I had the money to do it, I would start my own RST video again, you know, because video stores are sort of a nostalgic thing. People do still want to go there. Like when I went to the one that I found Jane Silent Bob reboot, I absolutely adore going there. You know, I just don't live in that area anymore. But, you know, if I come to visit my former roommate and stay the night or something, I might go rent a movie there. So it's amazing that I don't know if it's essential, you know, that's the problem these days, you know, a lot of these places are closed down because it's not essential. Which I bet Quick Stop would be open right now, you know, it's pretty essential. Have you guys ever been there? Have you ever been to the Quick Stop at all?
I have not.
I have.
No, you have? See, me and you have.
Well, when we went to the Secret Stash, my girlfriend, her family grew up in that area, so she took me to Leonardo. I saw the Quick Stop. I saw RST Video, went to the Stash. So I kind of got to see different, you know, locations from the Askewverse. So that was pretty awesome to get to do that.
So I got this shirt. I think I got it at the Secret Stash or whatever, but I got this shirt, the Vulgarian shirt, when I was going to visit, when I went to the Vulgarthon. They have a film festival called Vulgarthon. I've been, you know, basically I have this, was it, like I went there with my friend Robbie, and we're there like a couple days early. So my dad, who was with us, took us all to all the different places. So we went to Quick Stop, we went to RST, we went to what was RST at the time, because this was still 2001, I want to say, or 2002. So we also went to the Amy, the swing set. However, the swings were gone. Somebody had actually stolen the swings from the Amy swing set.
Damn.
You know, so I bet they put that shit on eBay somewhere. And then we also went to the one of the restaurant in Chasing Amy where Ben Affleck met with I believe it was the place that Affleck met with Jay and Silent Bob. So we went there. It was either that or the place that Alyssa and Holden had their like romantic kind of day before they actually started dating, right before he announced her that he was in love with her. So there's those, and then so I got to see all those sites and everything, and I mean it was a cool thing. Got to meet a few of the people, you know, Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson was there back then, because I guess he had, you know, just kind of like he has like little things where he'll be friends, you know, be okay, and then all of a sudden disappear and then, you know, reappear when I guess their little feud is over or whatever, you know, just how like a lot of people are, you know, period. If you're friends with somebody, sometimes you might take a little break from that person or whatever. And everybody like blames Jeff, and they shouldn't, because like, I mean, he like him not wanting to play Randall is his choice, you know, but a lot of people make a big deal about him not playing Randall. So I don't know. I always think that's kind of a bad thing to kind of deal with. What do you guys think?
I mean, it depends on where he's at in his stage in life. I mean, if he had other stuff going on, I mean, or he just wasn't interested and he just wanted to be removed from that. I mean, or he could have had obviously a personal issue with somebody. I don't know, but it probably could get a little tiring doing the same thing repeatedly over and over and over again. So, I mean, I guess it just depends on where he's at in his stage in life.
Well, let's get into like, what is your guys' favorite, favorite part, like reference from the movie? Like, what was your guys' favorite reference from Jay and Silent Bob Reboot? I guess I'll go with Rick first.
I mean, for me, my favorite part of the movie, my favorite reference in the movie is all the same thing. It's the scene with Holden McNeil, the Chasing Amy scene, I think is the best part of that movie. I think it has the most heart in the film. There were jokes in it, but it was also showing, you know, about Kevin Smith made this movie because he wanted to make a movie with his family, quote unquote, real family, and his movie family. And I think that scene basically encompassed that. And I thought it was the greatest scene ever, especially knowing that him and Affleck had a huge falling out, you know, I think 12 years beforehand, and they hadn't talked much and they were best friends. I mean, Kevin Smith bought a house from Ben Affleck. They were friends. Their kids grew up together, and, you know, to see that relationship basically fused back together and the comedy in the scene, I thought was the highlight of the movie.
Yeah. Real quick before I ask the other guys too, because they might have a different thing. That was actually not planned and not written into the original script. It was just when I forgot who it was, but somebody helped Kevin get in touch with Ben. Somebody had asked Ben a question about, you know, Kevin and everything. And Ben's answer to it was, a journalist asked, and Ben's answer to it was, I just haven't heard from Kevin and, you know, so many times. I would definitely listen to, you know, I would definitely hang out with Kevin if I got another chance to. And so that was his, you know, thing. Like, as long as, you know, Kevin does it first, he's okay with it. So,
yeah.
But that scene was not going to be in there, and it's probably one of the most tear-jerking scenes that's in the whole thing. What about you, Joe?
I would, the two scenes we've referenced already, the scene in the mall would be one, but like Rick was just talking about, that scene, and hearing you talk about how it was not originally part of the script, it's kind of interesting, because now thinking about that, it's like it really tied well with showing the transition of Jay's character, in wanting to be a dad, and the importance of him making that decision, hey, I got to go stand up for her and go get his daughter. So like that, so that interaction, that hearing some background on that now, it's like, wow, it would have, I'm sure they would have had some other way of getting that transition to happen. But it presented that in this story, but it also gave some continuity or some continuation of the story from Chasing Amy, and some of the importance. It also gave a chance to bring the little girl into it, which I believe was Jason Mewes' daughter, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And also, I mean, allowed Affleck to touch on a few Batman references and Justice League and stuff like that. So, I mean, there was the really good hitting humor in that scene, but like they were saying, like Rick was saying, it had the heart and it helped with the story development as well. So, I mean, to me, that's critical when you do that. So when it works on multiple levels. But another scene that really stood out to me, and it was really just really quick, is when they were running through the Chronicon thing, and they ran across the Clerks crew, and they threw them in black and white real quick, and yeah, they were screaming. That was funny. And little things like that that they had throughout, was those little funny references. They hit on those more often than not. And that's why in general, the film really, I enjoyed it quite a bit. So.
I agree, and what I really liked about the going into black and white and their like scared reaction of it and everything was hilarious. But the funniest thing about that, it reminded me so much of the original Strike Back, where they were going from one set to another, and they were seeing like the Scream set, and they were seeing all these other sets. It was like, okay, these are like the Goodwill Hunting 2, you know, hunting season bit. Like, mm-hmm. Those things were so great in the original movie that I felt like that was sort of a harken back, because like that was the time, like, you know, the timing that it would have had, and, you know, about the same time. Like, this was definitely a true reboot, you know, mm-hmm. Like they really did do a great job. And we haven't even touched upon the fact that Bluntman and Chronic is played by Melissa Benoist and Val Kilmer. I mean, good God, that's just hilarious casting right there. Right, Alfred?
That was. I was so, like, man, holy shit, who is that? And it's Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Well, he was looking rough in that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. But at least I think he was having problems, you know, himself, either.
Yeah.
I think he had like a stroke or something before. So he was trying to not, you know, do a lot. So he asked if he could play Silent Bob or Bluntman, you know, or whatever. And Kevin was excited, you know, like fucking Batman playing Bluntman. Like, how freaking awesome is that? You know, like that was pretty cool, I thought, you know.
You put it that way, this movie had two Batmans in it, Val Kilmer and Ben Affleck.
Right.
I didn't think of that before.
It should have had Michael Keaton and Christian Bale in it too.
Yeah.
You know, but I will say, okay, real quick, before I get into what your favorite one, like reference was, I do want to say this before I forget. The scene with the thing that was like the most cringy scene to me was hearing Harley Quinn, you know, Millennium Falcon play or talk about what she would do to Thor, you know, and everything, all the stuff. Like, as you know, like knowing that Kevin is her father and he's directing it, and he wrote that, just makes me go, oh, you know, like I would not, like I cannot imagine.
I wonder if there was some history to that, though, and maybe in their household, she maybe has some sort of jabs at him or something, and just to put him off guard, maybe, or there's probably some story behind that makes it internally funny between the two of them, at least.
Well, exactly. And then you have the payoff with the hologram at the end when it's Hemsworth. So
yeah, what did he say? He said something like have a good, what?
He said like, don't hump the hologram or something.
No. Yeah. He had some kind
of Don't take selfies.
Don't take selfies. But he also said something that was trademarked, you know, something, hymns worth it or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought that was so funny.
The other thing that bummed me out a bit is when they were at movies, and I think it's Kate Micucci who shows up as the worker there. I actually really like Clerks 2. I might be in the minority, but I really enjoy that movie. I really wanted Elias to be in the movie. And the fact that he didn't, I was wanting him to show up as the manager, something, and he didn't show up in that scene. I kind of was just a little disappointed that, like, he just didn't show up in the background in, like, the fry kitchen or something.
Right, yeah. They had that opportunity. Maybe it was a scheduling issue, because he had that opportunity, because there was, like, an old man in the fry kitchen that was taking place, like, that could have easily been Elias, where, as we, you know, if we're going to throw in as many freaking Clerks and Kevin Smith alumni, you know, he would have been perfect, you know, so... Totally agree. Alfred, what was your kind of favorite bit in the whole thing?
I like the scene that was referenced with Ben Affleck and Kevin Smith, where they're talking heart to heart. I like that. Also, that when Kevin Smith was talking about when they got how they got connected and they did that scene, I guess Ben Affleck was still having, you know, sobriety problems, and he was able to talk to Jason Mewes, who was sober, and while they were on the set. So he was pleased that they were able to talk about that.
That's cool. Nice.
Yeah. And then I like the Stan Lee scenes. I thought those were great. And Kevin Smith said the end scene in the robot is supposed to be Stan Lee in the robot, but he had passed before they could do that scene.
Aww.
I thought that would have been awesome.
I did like the ending with Stan Lee doing his bit, you know, on the IMDb thing. I thought that was that was a really sweet, like, little bit, you know, or whatever, that they had to throw in there. And then if you notice, Brody is wearing his Brody shirt, but it's Stan Lee instead of, like, the concoction that it was before.
Well, and you saw the hanging up in Brody's store, there's a Stan Lee plaque as well.
Yeah.
If you watch that scene, they have the plaque in the background for Stan Lee.
Oh, wow. And there's a lot of Marvel stuff. Like, there's even the references to Marvel that the show Brody get really upset at Jay for making fun of the Marvel movies or whatever, you know, which I thought was great, because Brody had that interaction with Stan Lee. I mean, to him, Stan Lee was like God, you know, and everything. So it was sort of a great reference back to Mallrats, I thought. I mean, there's so many great, great little references and everything to the film.
It's like being asked a question, what's your favorite, whatever. It's like, this movie's got so many. It's like my brain shuts down. It's like...
You know, and I was surprised, because, like, the trailers to me did not look very good, and I was scared of the movie, because, you know, even though people were telling me that had seen it, I think, like, even Rick had said good things about it online, other people were saying good things, I was still a little afraid, you know, because, like, as much of a big fan as I am, like, you know, you're kind of, your tastes have sort of changed, you know, the feelings that you have, like, we did a bit, I think, Joe, were you on our Film Freaks for Chasing Amy?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you remember, we had a bit about it, and we were talking about how we really weren't, I guess, necessarily happy with it, you know, like, it didn't hold up to us, you know, like we, you know, like it had in the past, right?
Yeah, seeing something 20, 25 years later, it doesn't, you see it through a different light, through a different lens, and Chasing Amy was a little bit different on that, but there's still some movies that will hold up. And this, to me, Clerks still has like the ultimate place to me. I think Rick touched on a little bit with Clerks 2. I still have a fondness for Clerks 2 as well. I know I'm in the minority as well on that, but But yeah, definitely when you see something years later, it's like, what was I thinking on some of them? Or maybe what was I thinking then not to like something? And right. Now I love it. Yeah. So.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and I think our biggest problem, I mean, I guess, is just how things have changed in time, you know, or whatever, our society, our feelings and everything like that. I mean, if you look at Chasing Amy in the light of like at that time, that period, you know, but like, would Chasing Amy hold up today as a good way to look at, you know, look at love and relationships in the LGBTQ community? Probably not, because
I don't even think that movie could get made today based on I don't want to say the message of it, but what happens in the movie, I think it would not get made today.
Well, I mean, the setup being that she was gay, but then she, you know, actually turned out to be bi, you know, so she never, you know, told everybody she was bi. That kind of hurt the girls that she was with. You know, and the LGBTQ community at that time loved the movie. Glad was very happy with it. I forgot which one they didn't like. Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, they didn't like, because there was so many, you know, like, I don't know, very bad words that, you know, were used throughout the movie that were very derogatory to the LGBTQ community, which is so funny because, like, he's not, you know, a bad person. You know, Kevin Smith doesn't write things to be the bad. It's just writes to, like Quentin Tarantino, you know, like writes things to kind of, you know, reflect the way people actually talk, you know, and stuff. And so, I mean, anyway, the point is, like, Chasing Amy, I don't think would hold up today, but the reboot, I think, really holds up very well. Like, having this been my only like second or third time watching it, last night, I was still in tears at the end with the Affleck scene. Like, that scene teared me up because it was such a sweet little story of like, and knowing a little bit more about Kevin and Viewskew and all the other stuff, then, you know what I mean, that then some people would, I took from it something very, you know, like, nice. Like, I thought this was definitely a great movie. So I felt like overall this movie had some great scenes in it throughout, just like Alfred said. Like, I think the whole movie itself was a lot funnier than even I thought it would be, and I'm very glad about that, because I kind of went in with low expectations and, you know, got, you know everything kept rising. So and this is a movie I probably would watch Strike Back a little bit more than Reboot, you know, in the realm of like my rankings for it. It would be high, but it wouldn't be, you know, high. Like, I just watched Jersey Girl, which they were completely obliterating on that in that movie, and I actually really, really dug that movie too. Still, that movie has a lot of heart to it too that people don't talk about, you know. I guess all because of the Bennifer situation, you know, fucking Affleck. You know, right? Like, I mean, unfortunately, he's kind of, you know, got too big of a person, and, you know, he was getting his profile taken away. But I loved that Alyssa Jones came back at the end of Reboot, and we got to see sort of like their friendship and how it's evolved throughout the years, and how she's good friends with them so much that he's her father, like, you know, the father of her child or whatever, even though they're not together, you know, or anything, you know.
Plus that also leads to one of the funniest lines in the movie when Jay is like, fucking finger cuffs. And it's like, you know, they joke about how they want to make a Netflix show, and one of the names was finger cuffs. Like, it's just the referential humor that he does is just so well done in the movie. And it's something like that if you're a fan and you've seen all the stuff, it's just like, you can't help but laugh at something like that. And it's one word, basically.
Exactly. Well,
wasn't that what the Netflix title was going to be if they did the spinoff or something like that? Yeah.
Well, I mean, would I don't know, like
I know they couldn't do that.
I'm just wondering about that because like was that in the Chasing Amy comic, that the fact that she was called Finger Cuffs? I'm wondering. Because like where did they like randomly come up with that, you know? Like I know it's a reference in the movie or whatever, but it's like it just makes me wonder about it because they never actually made a Chasing Amy like little like graphic novel or you know comic, you know, for it.
I guess in a way we're led to believe that the movie was, you know, the comic but in movie form, so her telling the story of Finger Cuffs might have been mentioned in the comic book, but we never definitively saw that.
Yeah. Because they did show like little, like, you know, in the end of Chasing Amy, you kind of get to see a little bit of the artwork. Artwork and some of the lines that he said in it. But I don't remember Finger Cuffs ever being mentioned. So it's funny because, like, I don't know. It's this Jay saying Finger Cuffs, which would make sense, though, because Jay does say that to Holden in Chasing Amy, in the scene, in the thing. He said, Finger Cuffs, you're so lucky, you know, you're lucky fuck, you know, blah, 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 you know, right? That scene in Chasing Amy really set the part that he could have put it in the comic because he heard Jay call her that, and that was the name that he, you know, that, right? So there could be that. I don't know, because I never, we never got to see that. And it's sad because, like, they have done a lot of comics, but it would have been cool if they did a Chasing, I mean, I guarantee you people would have bought an adaptation of Chasing Amy in comic book form if they had actually done it, you know? But it's never too late. You know, Kevin, if you're listening, you can go and make a Chasing Amy comic, and I'm sure people would still buy it, you know? All your fans, you know, would definitely. I'd buy. Who here would buy one? I would. Like Rick would.
Yeah,
I would.
Yeah. See, yeah. What?
The 25th anniversary is in what, 2 years? So he has time.
Yeah, in 2 years. Wow! Holy cow! Wait, I thought it was in 97.
Was it 97?
97.
Yeah. So 2022 would be 25 years.
25 years, Jesus.
It yeah, right? Like... Mallrats turns 25 years old this year.
Is it this year?
Yep, because they're putting out a special Arrow box set with 3 cuts of the movie.
What?
Oh, yeah, man. Pre-ordered already.
How does it, wait, how does that even, like, how There's is there 3 cuts?
The original cut, the theatrical cut, the unrated cut, which was on DVD. Mm-hmm. But then the most important cut, my first experience with Kevin Smith, would be the ABC cut of the movie, which was the first time I had ever seen a Kevin Smith movie, was Mallrats was on ABC. And they had to change so much of the movie because of language. And they have a whole entire cut that was made for TV. and that'll be on the collector's Blu-ray.
Dude, I want that. Is it Blu-ray or 4K?
Blu-ray. It's a 3-disc from Arrow Video, so it comes with a big box, a book, tons of bonus features.
Oh man, I'm. How much was that for pre-order?
I think it was $39.96 on Amazon.
Oh, nice. That's actually not that bad.
Yeah, it's not expensive for considering it's an movies. Arrow release.
Yeah, yeah.
And Arrow makes high-end boutique stuff. And it'll be in like a hard box too. It's not going to be just a regular case.
Oh wow!
Yep.
Well, there you go. They've also got a Arrow's got one for like the Friday the 13th a set that they just that's pre-ordered right now. You can get all the Friday the 13th movies. Period.
Yeah, oh, is that Arrow that's doing that as well?
Yeah.
That's Shout Factory.
Oh, is that Shout Factory? Okay.
Yeah, because it's part of the Scream Factory series.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. So holy cow, yeah. So much going on right now. Because I mean, we're at a pandemic. There's nothing else to do but put out old shit and finally make it, you know, right? That finally,
as a physical media fan, I can rant that They've announced more catalog titles coming in September and October because there's nothing new to put out on physical media. We're getting 4K Hitchcock. We're getting Private Parts and Pretty in Pink for the first time on Blu-ray. Like, stuff that has been, you know, not available on Blu-ray before is finally coming, and catalog stuff to 4K. Back to the Future, they just announced 4K in October. So.
Yep. This is the time, I guess, right now for that stuff. And it's amazing. I know they just released Jaws on 4K, and I think we're going to be doing Film Freaks at some point for Jaws, you know, which I think is amazing, which would be fun to cover that. But it's, you know, to me, honestly, this movie itself really set itself apart from a lot of Kevin Smith's like newer stuff, you know, like a lot of people aren't a fan of Tusk, or, and they even make fun of that. They make, I think somebody says a yoga hoser or something at some point in the movie. So there's a reference to that. You know, there's a Canadian guy saying that or something. So there's references, but his newer stuff doesn't have the same feel of these, you know, stuff. And I it was nice to see him go back, you know, basically to what we're used to, you know, so of him. So there you go. Does anyone have any last words about it? Did you guys think of anything else?
Go see it if you haven't watched it. Go watch it if you haven't seen it.
What about you, Joe?
I was very cautiously, not even say optimistic. I was very cautious when I was looking. I was like, oh, because the preview didn't look that promising, but it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And in actuality, on repeated viewing, it's even more fun in some ways, because you can get those rewind moments actually to because some of those jokes are just priceless.
I agree.
What about you, Rick?
I mean, I'm just glad to see Kevin Smith doing comedy films again. Because like you were just saying, you know, I tried to give The College Try with Tusk and watched it twice, and I just, not a huge fan. Red State, I liked, but Yoga Hosers, I wasn't a fan of. I really enjoyed Zach and Mary, but that's like, what, 11 or 12 years old now? So it had been a decade since he had done a comedy film. And it was good to see him go back to doing comedy, because I think that's where he excels. I don't think his horror stuff has been anything special. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, there was a new trailer for his new movie just dropped Sunday, I think, called Kilroy Was Here. And it has Harley and Jason Mewes. And I can't tell if it's a horror movie or if it's supposed to be horror comedy. But it does not look very well, very good. And I think he accelerates so much more when he's just doing comedy. Even, you know, I really like Zach and Miriam. That's not even in the universe. Well, it wasn't when it came out, but, you know, I still thought Zach and Miriam was a very funny movie. So I think Kevin Smith is a great comedy director. The horror stuff, hopefully we see more comedy, but like I said, his new trailer was a horror movie, and I was like, no, more comedy. Work on Clerks 3, work on Mallrats, something.
I was not even aware of this Kilroy Was Here, so.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll be better than the trailer, then it'll do like reboot, and it'll be, if the trailer wasn't very good, maybe it'll fall in the line of reboot. Yeah, there you go.
Definitely. All right. Well, I guess, Rick, tell us, what have you been up to?
Well, I have my YouTube channel, Down to Movie, and I've been dropping videos like 2 to 3 times a week. I do reviews on there, as well as show off my ridiculous physical media collection. So, you know, I've been buying a ton of stuff and adding to the collection and watching a good amount of stuff, still, you know, being on partial lockdown. So, you can check it out at youtube.com/downtomovie.
Awesome. So what have you been up to, Joe?
Basically, just trying to get through the situation, the pandemic stuff that we're going through. I'm using it as an opportunity to catch up on some really old films that I hadn't seen through the years. because I've seen everything newer anyway. So seeing some older stuff and just sort of trying to get my get the vision right for where we're going to go as a team going forward on some of the stuff.
All right. And what about you, Alfred?
I've been working on another podcast called Performance Enhancing Films, where a friend of mine and I from the improv theater we work at Push in Norfolk, we interview comedians and actors on what movies influence them and how they draw from that in their performances. And like Joe, I've been watching a lot of old detective movies from the 1930s and 40s. I've been interested in like the pre-code films, which you can look that up. There's a whole interesting thing before they had the codes that they had to make movies by, and watching old serials. And I've started a Doctor Who podcast called Who's First. We're starting off with the first Doctor Who from 63 and going to see how far we can get.
Yeah, definitely. That's and, awesome.
With that, I hate to go, but I got another engagement, so I'll talk to y'all later. I got something at 7.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
It's a pleasure to be on with you, Rick and Joe. See you next time.
Definitely.
See you, Alfred.
See you. Well, I just want to make mention that I guess next month we've got Dr. Sleep that Alfred will be talking about with us or whatever. So, and I think we'll probably have you back, Joe, because you're going to be like continuing to be our guy here. And I think we're having another person, I can't say who yet, to come on by. But Rick, once again, you were invited back again for next season for sure. So we'll just let you know ahead of time what we're going to be doing, and we'll see which ones you want to do. Because we'll probably have a couple like already figured out by then. We were going to do mainstream today. We were going to record it, but we're going to take a break for another month and record it next month and have it ready for September. So September we'll have the mainstream Steven Spielberg part two. So get ready for that, which I'm gonna try to rewatch some of the ones I haven't been able to watch yet, and we'll talk about that too. There's also an HBO Max if anybody has that or whatever, but there's a HBO Max documentary on Steven Spielberg. So
that's the one that I referenced in our first thing. And I watched that. It's like, it's a good 2.5 hours long, but it flies by. And it's so in depth on just his whole catalog.
Yeah. I've got to check it out. You know,
great watch.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. And I've also been watching a couple of the ones that I hadn't seen before. So we'll be able to talk about that in part two.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Thank you, Rick, once again, and Joe. Joe, you're definitely going to be one of our new co-hosts, taking over for Donnie, unfortunately, because Donnie's not even around anymore. So, he's not even on Facebook anymore. So, I don't know where he is. But,
he's gone rogue.
Yeah, he's dealing with his own, you know, stuff that's going on. We're all kind of dealing with that right now during this pandemic. So, it's hitting probably harder than others. So, I'm sorry about that, but we'll try to keep doing podcasts. I know I'm going to say this now, but I know like a lot of these podcasts are going to end up being, wrapped up this season pretty soon. And then I'm taking a break from some of them and concentrating. I know Hollywood Boulevard will have another season next year, but a lot of the other podcasts may not have one next year, but maybe back another year, you know, because I got a lot of film stuff to get done and I don't have a lot of time, you know, and everything. So I'm trying to minimize my time here. Thank you guys for checking us out. Check us out on indiefilmcafe.net. Indiefilmcafe.reviews, indiefilmcafe.podbean.com, and at patreon.com/indiefilmcafe. So thank you guys so much and hope you guys enjoy this show. Thank you guys for coming on. I love this. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Everybody, have a fantastic rest of your week. Bye.
Bye.